The wall is like 2 feet high.
Yeah, this ain't Attack on Titan, guys.
No.
It's an easily scalable wall.
This is a light leap over. Like, not even like you don't gotta put in much effort. A child could infiltrate this thing.
Hi, I'm Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I'm Andrew Tejada, codename Arate. This season, we're racing through every part of the Tomorrowverse on
yet another DC animated podcast, part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
Welcome to yet another episode of yet another DC animated podcast. My name is Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate.
Andrew and I have known each other since 1996.
That was the year Cherokee Kid dropped, where Sinbad had to learn how to be a gunslinger to avenge his father or something. I don't really remember the plot. I remember watching this like 100 times, but I can't tell you the plot. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I just got the level of what you were hitting on with that thing. Proof, y'all, that Sinbad was not a genie. He was a gunslinger.
Yeah, he wasn't making Kazam, all right?
He was going kablam.
I also want to point out this movie was produced, one of the production companies was Afro and Bell Bottoms Productions. I hope they're still around because that is a great, great studio name.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a subsidiary of like FUBU or something. But we are talking about gunslingers. There were adventures. I'm like trying to connect the Sinbad thing to like adventures. There was also a non-remembrance of this plot. Because today we're continuing on with our journey through the Tomorrowverse as we talk about the next, or almost like penultimate film, because the next set are a collected saga, even though it's a three-parter, calling this a penultimate film within the Tomorrowverse, Justice League War World. Now, this movie, I feel, might have been so hyped up because it received a rated R. This was like at a time when it was just like DC Animation was just announcing movies left and right, and they were like, listen, we're gonna give everything a rated R right now. So there's gonna be everything in blood, violence, some scenes that you know, for PG-13 rated podcasts, we had to always hide against, but you know, some scenes of like naked people, as we saw Superman and Superman Man of Tomorrow. So today we got this 89-minute film, 89 minutes that came out in 2023. Continuing to be directed by Jeff Wamster. So, you know, he's been directing all the other Tomorrowverse films, except for the one with Batman, as well as the Superman Man of Tomorrow, I believe it was. Screenplay was written by many people we've seen already throughout this entire universe. As we have Ernie Altbacher. We know that Ernie has some work with the showcases from back that we first covered, as well as Jeremy Adams, who also had their hand in that. Josie Campbell, who contributed to Legion of Superheroes. We're going to keep on going. Animation services was provided by, of course, once again, Ansys Studio Digital Emation. So that's why we got our sharp jawlines this season versus the, I guess, not there. Everybody's more proportional compared to DCAMU.
Yeah, I guess it's the lines. Yeah, I guess when you're drawn so sharp, you know, you just, yeah, you're tight.
You lose muscle mass.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. That's a side effect.
All right, so our list of cast is pretty huge today. So we're not going to share everybody, just because if we did, we'll be sitting down here for 5 hours going through the entire DC universe for y'all. But we do see a lot of main people, such as Darren Criss, as Darren Criss's Superman returns. Jensen Ackles also returned with his Batman returning. The Dark Knight Rises here. Stana Katic. Unfortunately, I don't have a pun for 1984, but we see that her Wonder Woman here jumps to the future well past 1984. Mongol, who is supposed to be the villain of our movie today, is voiced by Robin Atkin-Downs, who we know we've seen in some past Tomorrowverse productions. And finally, we got some special casting for y'all. As we have, first up, he was Parasite in our Man of Tomorrow film. He was also a villain in three seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that still haunt me to this day, because see, this man was just putting in work as a villain. He's got Brett Dalton, who is now today Batlash. No relation to the Bat family, as we could figure out.
Okay. That was him. Oh, okay, cool.
Frank Grillo, we've seen him a lot, most recently in a lot of Marvel productions as Crossbones. Today he is Agent Faraday. This is his DC role before he takes on the full role, I believe, of animation live action of Sergeant Rock Sr. in Creature Commandos DC series coming out 2024, late this year, hopefully. This was not sponsored. We just had to make sure that we have more episodes of this podcast going. And finally, this man broke the Flash's back in the Flash CW series. He put the work on the Flash before. He was the second fastest man alive because he taught us that it was important not to take drugs in order to enhance your speed. As we have Teddy Sears, a.k.a. Zoom, as he is voicing the warlord, Travis Morgan.
And he's, yeah, appropriate.
All right, so with that, we're going boom tube over to the beginning of Justice League War World.
All right, so we start by riding into town with a cowgirl in an extremely hostile town where people are shooting at each other on the street casually, and some people aren't. So, of course, over time, Wonder Woman is going through town. She gets harassed by someone and immediately handles them. And she is easily fighting off these guys, and one tries to shoot her in the back. But before he can shoot, Jonah Hex, a classic Western DC staple, shows up and shoots the gun out of the person's hand and is like, hey, hey, none of that. No, none of that. And it's great, you know, to see Jonah Hex coming back in his Western setting. And, oh, no, actually, it's not great because he's the villain.
Yeah, it is a shocking twist here to see that Jonah Hex, who is normally the one fighting for truth, justice, and the Western way, he is actually the one that is holding everybody hostage in this town, along with their gang. And this comes to light when, as Wonder Woman is getting the details about who, what's going on, who he is, drinking some better whiskey than they had down in the saloon, they see a doorway headed over by a bank where apparently all the townspeople reside. And he explains the reason why they all live there is because in the past, they had all the land. Unfortunately, they couldn't pay their taxes. So when we took it over, they still hadn't paid up. So now we had to rush them over to this bank where they're staying there because that's the only place that they want to stay. And I have so many questions about like land governance here. It doesn't get answered at all because we had to keep on moving because at this point, somebody busts out from the bank and they are, it's a family, a father, daughter, mother. They are traveling in this like prairie horse-drawn carriage. And they unfortunately get stopped by the same group of criminals and outlaws that have taken over the city. My question is, why didn't they just keep going?
Yeah, or leave at night? Why? Broad daylight in the middle of an open shootout? You're going to just... Even if you're like, I'm going to take my chances, you might just get shot in the crossfire.
Right. Stay low and keep moving. That's it. The horse will do all the work. And luckily, the horse may not even get hit. In fact, people will move out the way if they got trampled. Just keep moving.
Or why not climb out the other side of the wall? Are they watching that too? Like, anyway.
Before we dive into the next, like, semantics of
was
the
that
proper
the only
prisoner.
Way out? Like, anyway. The parents are like, please, we have a daughter in the back. We want to just leave. And they're like, we will let you leave. This earth, that is. And they shoot both of the parents. And I thought this was going to, I fully thought this was going to be a Batman origin story for a second. Mm-hmm. they go a different way about it. Because for a reason that is not explained, one of the thugs wants to just cap the kid too. Why? What benefit would that be to do that? I don't know. And I can't tell you. But what I can tell you is that Diana gets involved and jumps in and stops the sheriff from shooting a girl, takes the girl into the bank base, and everyone is saying, hurrah, thank you, what's your name? And she looks up and she goes, I don't really know. So no time to dwell on that because Jonah Hex has a cart of dynamite. And it's headed towards the bank town.
Also, we just want to flag one thing about the bank town. They were like, yeah, we got, you know, we're protected by the walls of it and all that. The wall is like 2 feet high.
Yeah, this ain't Attack on Titan, guys. It's an easily scalable wall.
this is a light leap over. Like, not even, like, you don't got to put in much effort. A child could infiltrate this thing. So, Jonah decides he's going to take this dynamite, light a stick, put it in a cart with more dynamite, and have a horse pull it over to the bank so it could blow everybody up. It's just complete overkill, honestly. This is more dynamite than Tiger Dude back in Static Shock. And
he's coming up a lot lately, though.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm sorry, Tusk, but he's still number one in our hearts. But Tiger Guy just has so many, made an explosive comeback for some reason. So now Wonder Woman is telling everybody, because she sees this dynamite heading towards them, she tells everybody to head further back into the bank town. Unfortunately, we do get introduced to a character, Batlash. I realize I said, unfortunately, we get introduced to this guy, but bear with us. Batlash, a classic DC character we talked about in our cast list today. He's very much on Wonder Woman's side because he sees how much that she's willing to just help them out in certain cases. And even comes up that he doesn't even have a stake for even being here. So...
I just like to hang out here on the weekends. I don't know.
I engage in shootouts and complete land takeovers by criminals. So Batlash, unfortunately, doesn't move in time when he's trying to help someone else get out the way. So Wonder Woman picks him up, flings him. And this is the first time we see her showing the amount of strength that she actually has. So when she throws him, everybody's shocked, but they get even more shocked when she takes the full hit of the explosion to the face. And unlike Beast Boy, Wonder Woman just got right back up and brushed off her hat. Because much like Luffy, don't mess with the hat, because she had to make sure that it was okay.
Yeah, and this act inspires everyone, like, is she an angel? Is she sent from heaven? In a way, she is. We'll get to that later. But Diana goes, and like any other traditional Wonder Woman movie, she goes and blocks bullets, tears through enemy forces, and kills them all. No, actually, she doesn't kill them all. She just lets them run away. Why? Why would you let these people get away? I don't know. But she does. And in the aftermath, the sheriff is complaining about the rescue, but she is seems committed to helping these people, though she would help them if she just killed the guys right away.
I'm just take them out, you know.
But she didn't have a problem doing that earlier. Meanwhile, in the bar, Jonah Hex is saying, you know what? We didn't go too far with those bank people. Keeping them behind a wall where they're slowly starving to death while we shoot at them to lower their morale is not enough. We need to take more extreme measures. And... can't even get through this. This is a first, but I can't even say the plot. So, okay. The movie comes to a cold stop when Jonah Hex's men complain about the leadership around here. Jonah Hex pulls out a large gold watch and proceeds to give this whole speech about it. And at first I was like, this sounds familiar. But when he mentions that he put the watch up his ass, we are PG-13, it's okay. He put the watch up his ass and smuggled it for a year. I am convinced they just stole the speech from Pulp Fiction and copy-pasted it here. Like, there's... why is this in the movie? What?
I think this is like... The 10-15 minute mark of this movie. I have no idea of the direction it's going. All I know is it's just been inspired by Pulp Fiction right now. And it leads into Jonah Hex being able to take out all of his insubordinates. Thanks for the damage that had been done to the clock some time ago that he never actually repaired. So now that this has all happened, we get to the point in the time of the day when this family should have left earlier in the film, nightfall. And Wonder Woman decides she's going to work with Batlash and some people who are decided to join this, this neighborhood watch to enact a plan to try to see if they can get some supplies from a far off outpost. And in this outpost, we also find out that it's run by Jonah Hex. So some people are like, we don't want to take part of it because Jonah Hex is already crazy, as we saw from our whole watch conversation here. But also, they don't want to tempt the fates here because they already saw earlier someone had passed away or someone was killed because they were trying to do this. So Wonder Woman decides she's going to go into Hex's office once again and try to see if she can find out any plans, or at least like if something comes up, she can distract him long enough for Batlash to head on out, pick up the supplies, and head back into the bank. And it starts to work. It does lead, though, into a full battle in which Wonder Woman sees that she uses her lasso And I had the question here. If she didn't know what she can do, how does she know to use the lasso?
I was hoping you would be able to tell me, because there is no in-plot reason why she would need to use the lasso of truth at all.
There really isn't.
From her perspective, she is just causing a distraction, which let's not even get into the fact that Wonder Woman versus Jonah Hex is not a fight. No, it's not a fight.
That's a massacre way now. Like,
unless Jonah Hex has some magic bullets, and sometimes he does, this is not a fight. So I assure you, this should not have been an obstacle for her in the movie. But for whatever reason, she finds out that Jonah Hex is going to use a train full of dynamite to blow up the bank town. Now, you might be wondering, if he has enough resources to fill a train of dynamite and also commandeer a train and also send it spiraling towards the bank town, could he not use that to hire more men or maybe just go somewhere else? Don't worry about it. They're not going to answer that for you. But what they are going to answer is Wonder Woman is going to go stop the dynamite train. Again, she's not going to kill Jonah Hex here, even though she has easy opportunity to do that. She just leaves him alive, and her and her soon to be proven to be fireproof horse go to stop the train.
I forgot about that horse.
That horse is a metahuman.
Number one on Amanda Waller's list right now, I'm pretty sure. So Wonder Woman goes out. She's traveling at the speed, I guess. The horsepower is amazing because she catches up to the train. And as she's on there, she takes out everyone. I will say, we're laughing through this, but I did enjoy a lot of the fight scenes. I felt like it was done decent enough for me to enjoy the film. It's just that, like, after seeing movies like Justice Society, World War II, and seeing the full capability of her powers, we don't really see it quite here. But it was still fun to watch, to see how she's just, like, knocking out, punching out people. Really easily, very much in like tight spaces too, where you just wouldn't expect that kind of combat from someone. And she's able to take down at least like the people inside. Unfortunately though, she gets rushed out, and the best course of action is to do the most, I guess, destructive version of Spider-Man 2, because she hops out, takes the tracks off the ground, and because of that, she's able to move the train, I'm assuming like 3 centimeters to the right, so it doesn't quite destroy the bank town.
Yeah, okay, so she does that, and it is cool. Don't get us wrong, it's cool, but okay, it doesn't do that. But I mean, it basically does destroy the
town. It does the exact task that Jonah Hex wanted, but not as bad.
I mean, no one's living there anymore. They even say later, like, well, we're done. Like, I guess we're not dead is the only thing, but... Okay.
It's like, did they even have the supplies? Did Lash come back with the supplies?
I don't know. So from this, they're celebrating their win, but unfortunately, Bat Lash is shot during the celebration. And I'm sorry, it's funny because they just did this in Justice Society. This is the same scene. Where somebody Wonder Woman is vaguely interested in gets shot. But because we had 2 minutes of screen time with them, we don't really feel anything. But Wonder Woman does. She punches what's left of Jonah's face straight off. And a girl asked her, the girl she saved at the beginning, says, hey, if Batlash, hero to all, would have survived, would you have stayed? She doesn't answer that, and she goes into the horizon. For the continued adventures of... Nope, none of that, because we're in a completely different story now. Hard cut.
Yes.
It's Bruce Wayne, and he's killing people.
And he also has extra long hair. So, of course, it's now a rated R movie, because we see the entire almost naked body of Bruce Wayne with this long hair. I'm pretty sure it got the rated R because they wanted to make it a thirst trap for any Batman fan out there. And Bruce is fighting. He apparently is fighting against an entire army, because that's what Batman does. And during this time, he gets his cowl or his helmet kind of like cut by a sword by this man who very much looks like a version of He-Man. Like, honestly, I know the stories of these characters, but the more I kept watching it, the more I was like, this is a straight off ripoff of He-Man.
It's like, oh, yeah.
Everybody felt like a He-Man character.
Spots of difference. Wait a minute. You actually can't.
But it is a interesting sequence here because as we see this battle, we see that the character that we know as Bruce Wayne loses. So now he's being held captive by all of these individuals as they are now traversing through this, I don't even know what to call it, like a high fantasy past Jurassic World swamp area-ish. I don't know.
It's everything just combined into one. And so we find out very quickly with very little context that, you know, this version of Bruce, a mercenary, he was sent to kill this king and this warlord king that is good or bad. We don't know. They don't bother getting into it. But Bruce says he was sent by a wizard. So the warlord says, okay, well, if that's the case, we're going to go kill him. And he just enslaves Bruce and puts a chain around Bruce's neck that the warlord, this warlord guy holds, this warlord king. And when Bruce complains, he goes, be thankful it's only one chain. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Also, you would be carrying it, warlord.
Yeah.
You would be the one chain, because I think he had a chain to his wrist or something. It was
yeah,
like,
where does the other chain go? I don't want to think about it. Are there multiple chains? Like, what are you talking about, bro?
Why do you have more chains? I feel like if you're traversing this world, you should not have unnecessary equipment.
Right. While they're traveling, so in advance, Bruce warns that there's a lot of dangers ahead. Be careful. But Warlord and his extremely angry-looking horse refuse to wait for the night. And at one point, Bruce is like, shouldn't we attack at night? And the warlord's like, this is a daytime planet. It's always been daytime. And when Bruce is like trying to process this information and he's asked where he's from, we see the Apple loading wheel because he can't remember anything. But he does remember all his rogues gallery, as we learned in another scene.
Yeah, it is. We learned this when they decide to camp for the night. And Bruce, in this universe, apparently he's leaning very heavily into his mercenary persona. He's saying that like the only thing that matters to him is gold. The warlord, who I'm assuming is supposed to be good, is asking him like, what about caring for other people, saving things? And he's just like, but can it pay me though? And as Bruce is telling him this, they unfortunately all get more or less run over by like some kind of creature that comes out. It's like a set of like wild boar or something like that. So they try to head for the trees to avoid the stampede and not recreate Lion King. And as they are watching, as everything runs away, some members, like we have Mariah and Makiste, who I'm just going to give the most Jack character award to.
That's fair.
Okay. Yeah, because the man had a mace on his hand. It wasn't he didn't have a mace in his hand. His hand was the mace. Feel like that has a lot of weight to it.
That's heavy, y'all. That's more than a 20-pound weight.
So as everybody is trying to figure out what just happened, Bruce says, I don't care about the things that were running away. I more so care about what they were running from. And in that moment, a giant dinosaur-like creature comes out, starts eating everybody in the crew, only leaving Bruce, Warlord, Makiste, and Mariah, who are the only people left. Maybe there's like one or two other people, but it is a shocking turn of events that no one would have ever expected from Bruce talking about gold.
Yeah, and this scene ends with Bruce covered in dino organs. Because the warlord guy is able to slice the dinosaur's stomach and while chained together with Bruce, and dino organs spill everywhere. So after this scene, I also want to mention a line in this where someone says to Bruce, you know nothing about me. And they respond, neither do you. Like, sick burn, dude. Like, what is the point of this scene? Anyway, so they next have to cross the Dragon Sea. And they all are shocked when a dragon shows up. It's on the name, guys. And after barely surviving the Dragon Sea, Bruce looks out into the ocean and sees the vision of an old man who says, "It's you, isn't it?" And disappears. And maybe that's going to come back later, but not in this movie. Spoiler. Immediately, plot keeps going on. The next thing they got to do is climb up a mountain. My credit to my guy, Matisse, because he is climbing up a sheer rock face with a mace as one of his hands. Bro is carrying a mace on his hand and his whole body on a sheer rock face. I have some rock climbing friends. I'm going to ask if this is possible. But while they're there, unfortunately, the next of the Power Ranger dinosaurs, Pterodactyl, flies in and nearly kills everybody, but definitely takes Mariah. And Mariah goes down while killing the Pterodactyl. But luckily, she's the last death of this crew.
False. This is the Suicide Squad, y'all. Because as they reach the entrance to the temple, Wikis, who honestly I was rooting for him. I was like, yo, if he was in the Commandy short, he would 100% solo the entire adventure. He says that he's just gonna walk through the temple. And then he immediately disintegrates. Like, all you see is the flesh burn off his body, leaving nothing but shattered bone. It is so shocking. It is so out there. I'm still trying to process it because it's like, it then turns into Bruce trying to figure out with the Warlord, how are they going to get past this magic? And it's scary looking magic. But as many, I guess, scientists would say, science that you don't understand will look like magic, because in that moment Bruce sees wires in this prehistoric world, showing that this world isn't quite what it seems, as he follows along the wires to the control panel. And you would think it would act more like a circuit breaker. No, Bruce just takes the electrified wires and pulls it with his bare hands.
Don't do that at home, kids.
Never do that at home. Don't be Batman.
So they keep going through this thing. They almost hit a spike trap, at which point I wonder, is the chain necessary at this point? Because you're already here. So I don't know. And they immediately answer my question, because at one point, Bruce gets to the other side of a trap and uses the opportunity to break free of the chain when he has to disable the trap. The king has to give him the key to his chains. And Bruce leaves the king to get mauled by a minotaur that's just there. So you remember that magic, the technology reveal? Forget about that. There's minotaurs. So Bruce then walks into the throne room to get paid, I guess. And he walks in on two chained women. One of them is Mariah. And the other one
How did she get back? Yeah, I'm sorry. I just need to know. I had to ask that. Like, I figured that she survived. But how did she beat them there?
Magic? Also, yeah, I mean, even if she beat them there, how did she end up chained so quickly? Like, did she come with the chains? Like, I don't
apparently,
know.
Apparently, if you run with the Warlord's crew, everybody has
right.
a chain.
All right, that's right. She probably chained herself. So she's on one chain, and Diana's in the other. Don't worry about it. And the wizard is revealed to be named Deimos. You know, the classic DC character Deimos that everybody knows that hasn't read a comic. I had no idea who is. Full disclosure, I had no idea who this guy is.
So this is a self-contained story. Every single person in this, every single person besides Bruce and Diana are involved in this world. Everybody that there aren't that many stories I've ever read of these characters, but from what I've looked up, it is absolutely wild. It is bonkers. We'll keep on moving.
Is it more bonkers than a fight scene that's about to happen? Because to clarify, Deimos is a wizard, right? He has advanced technology, right? So when he decides to double cross Bruce, he uses a gun. It's a regular gun. It doesn't work. And
he's a terrible shot.
And just about when he's about to die, Warlord arrives. He survived. He saves Bruce by throwing the head of a minotaur
at Bruce to knock him off course. And I promise you that if he had managed such a feat where he's throwing the Minotaur head, throwing it at Bruce would do more damage than saying, look out, you know? But no time for that. It's time for a fight scene or something.
So now Deimos is just shooting up the club here. He's missing left and right. He's destroying this. It's like a Scrooge McDuck smog setup because there's all this treasure all around. And everybody's just hiding behind different pieces of heaps of treasure and gold. Unfortunately, Mariah and Diana are still chained to the thing. So they're requesting to be set free in order to get out. Diana ends up getting free. And this is when she immediately jumps into action. She starts fighting against, I completely forgot to mention this part. This is when the movie basically steals the end sequence of Aladdin 1, where Deimos turns into a giant snake in surrounded by gold. I know y'all remember this scene because I can't be the only one, where Jafar basically has to take out all of his adversaries here. Deimos pulls the exact same plan. And fortunately for Jafar, that was a PG film. This is R. So at one point, because he no longer has hands, Deimos has to leave, just has to drop the gun. Because at one point it jams and Bruce knocks it out of his hand also. So somehow in the treasure room, they find more ammo. Just literally find 6 bullets right in the middle of all this gold and everything. And it's enough for Warlord to pick it up and say, I remember this. I remember using this weapon. My name isn't Warlord. It's Travis Morgan.
Who the hell is that?
Right.
I need to mention that throughout this fight scene, when they're trying to fight the snake, they try to use swords. Wonder Woman tries to use a lasso of truth that she finds in the gold pile.
Oh, yeah, it just happily opens up to her.
It doesn't work, by the way. But the gun does. The blippy knocks out the snake almost instantly, but only shoots out his eye. The wizard turns back into normal form and says, you know, I'll get you next time, and disappears. My guy, if you had the magical power to teleport, you think that would have been useful in the previous battle at all? Or any of your other magical powers? Why did you just use a gun?
My man's out here like, I'm magic incarnate. Y'all think y'all could just take me down so easily? My man got shot in the face.
Yeah, I think it is easy. Just shoot you in the face. That's your weakness. After the battle, Warlord's like, hey, Diana and Bruce, you want to be on my squad? I need to remind this man that not 20 minutes ago, Bruce left him to die at a Minotaur. And just because he helped, that was to help all of them survive. Not on you, bro. But Bruce declines, says, I gotta go home. Because he and Diana are also like, something feels off. Feels like we kind of know each other, which let's not get into how that doesn't make any sense. But they decide to just go home. And the Warlord's like, I know I don't belong here, but I think I'm just going to chill here. It's like, okay, dude, see you later.
This man didn't care anything about his responsibilities back home, wherever he comes from.
He has semi-great power, so no responsibility. And yeah, we're done. We're done with this section of the movie. It's time for something different.
Yeah. This is when your TV screen is going to lose all of its color. Because we hop back to, I don't even know what time period. It feels like it should be like the 20s to maybe the 1920s or maybe even the 1950s based off the way that many things looked. But there's no color. We'll get into that later. But we learned that apparently there was a spaceship that landed somewhere nearby, and now agents from all different departments are coming in to check out what's going on. I say all different departments because we actually never get we never get told what affiliation each agent is with. And this is where we get finally introduced to the other person who's on the cover of this DVD or Blu-ray copy that you may own, Superman, or rather Clark Kent, as Agent Kent reports for duty to speak with Agent Faraday. And the two of them are just talking about how there was a spaceship that was here. It's getting clearly cleaned up. However, there were some people that did see what went down. So they need to go speak with them to get some insight about where this alien may be because they do believe that something else is here.
So, along the way, Kent is asked, remember to uphold the true justice American way. So, you know, that's aging really well, by the way. And on the way to his investigation at a diner, he bumps into Bruce, who is now an officer of the law. And they go into the diner and you meet some characters, Snapper Carr, the Langs, and they're all talking about what they saw. This scene, I just say it goes on for maybe 3 minutes, but it feels like 17 years because all they do is talk about maybe they saw an alien, maybe they didn't, but it just doesn't go anywhere and it doesn't ultimately matter because Diana, it all leads up to, let's give you the cliff notes. Like, why did the location of the alien matter? It didn't, like, they go to this whole thing about, I saw the alien behind the barn. They don't go to the barn. They never check it out. Like, it doesn't matter. So Wonder Woman is in the bar, in the diner, I mean, and she remembers being a secretary, but she doesn't actually remember her job, which makes them suspect. And they decide, out of nowhere, the alien must actually be in this room because of the number of footsteps coming back from the barn. In the middle of the scene, Diana, Bruce, and Clark start hearing music. They start having visions, and at one point, because they're talking about the music too loudly, Clark freaks out, pushes the one black guy in the room, and the black guy turns out to be an alien. Y'all thought I was going to let y'all get away with that? We're recording this during Black History Month. No thank you, sir.
And in that moment, the alien threw up his hat, creating the Smallville brawl. Because in that moment, as he stands up, we see that every other person in the diner is also an alien. The only people who aren't aliens are Faraday, Clark, Bruce, and Diana. The latter three tried to make their escape because apparently Faraday got pushed off somewhere and is recuperating from a wound. So as they exit out, they each show that they somehow have some semblance of their powers. Clark is able to, as you mentioned, push a man into the jukebox. Diana is able to basically solo an alien and hold it by his neck to show her power once again. And Bruce busts out some kung fu moves just randomly. I feel like if you were a day cop and you just started doing that, like, you should not be a cop at all.
Yeah. So now that they defeated these groups of white Martians, finally... we kind of get closer to what the movie's actually about, because at one point they steal a car, Batman makes an impromptu bomb, none of it matters, don't worry about it, and they go through a portal, and after going through the portal they find that Martian Manhunter John Jones is being held captive, and they free him. He now reveals, buckle in everybody, that they are on a planet ship thing called War World, and John Jones was hired to project illusions to trap people in, because War World is run by violence and fear of the prisoners on War World. So they thought the best way to do this was to trap everybody in these highly specific fantasy construct illusions, and that's why this all happened.
The other two things that come up are, one, our heroes still don't have their memories about what happened. But Jean says that he was able to create a back door for them to start figuring out what's going on by psychically implanting certain things into their minds. But for some reason, it doesn't give them the memories of who they are. The other thing that we find out when they decide they need to go to do whatever it needs to be done for the next step is that whoever's running War World isn't working alone. And we get the reappearance of the nastiest person you will ever see in this universe. It seems as Lobo was hired to come here and steal or kidnap all of these people, bring them onto this place, especially anyone that was limited edition, like a last Kryptonian, a last Martian, I guess the other two were just cannon fodder or something, from the way it sounds like.
Yeah, so we also, from here, we get a scene where John Jones is brought to Mongol, who was looking through the multiverse to find people to shove in his war world. Now, here's something. Like, first of all, how? How are you doing that? Secondly, could you not use a couple of AAA batteries instead? And thirdly, I know World World is roughly the size of an artificial planet. Would it not be easier to, say, go to one planet and just make all of those people, trap them all in individual illusions that would put violence and fear? Like, why are you abducting superheroes specifically? Does that benefit you at all? Do you have a grudge that we don't know about with these characters? How? Why? Why would you do this?
The other reason why it will work better for him to just go and take one planet is because it gets revealed when our trio or Trinity here wake up in a random location. They don't see John with them, but they wake up and they see a bunch of humans all around them. And every single time that they look at one, they realize that the one next to them, and the higher up on the level in the row, looks just like the one before. So Batman, using his deduction of logic, because apparently he came to first and was already in the computer, deduces that apparently they're all clones. Every single person on War World is a clone. And this whole world can recreate people by replicating them. So by that logic, Mongo, you have an infinite source of power, because you completely Westworld the entire scenario by putting new people with the same memories of all the struggles, all the hardships they experience. It's a perpetual energy machine that you have here if you're going to go with human suffering as the cloning process.
This is pretty much the equivalent of, like, you're running a normal Earth prison and you need, like, people to run on a treadmill. And you could have anybody, but you go for John Wick, Ethan Hunt, and Dominic Toretto. I'm not telling you how to do your job, but I am telling you, they're going to get out. And get out they do, because they get their costumes. Don't worry about it. They get their costumes back. They start to regain their memories as time goes on. And at
one thing that does become clear in this is that it is clear that the three of them are definitely the one. They tell themselves, we know that we're not the clones. I don't know how they know they're not the clones. But they do realize from their memories the Earth that they come from. So we know that Superman and Batman here are the same Superman and Batman that we saw from the Man of Tomorrow and the Batman Long Halloween films that were taken at the end of Legion of Superheroes. And Wonder Woman seems to be the same one from Justice Society, because when she sees Clark in his Superman outfit, she immediately starts calling him Clark, but says, you're not the same Clark that I know and love. Which means that Shakespeare and Diana got together later on in the future.
Yeah, and this is a touching moment, but less touching because John Jones is being tortured. Why do they keep doing this to him in movies?
Right. Like, I feel like this man always screams in every animated production I've ever seen him in.
Yeah, I think, like, even when he got beat by Doomsday, I think that was probably he got lit on fire in that movie. Never mind. Anyway.
he was on fire for 30 minutes, and they were...
So speaking of things that don't make sense, Mongol says, like, I'm going to torture you for a while and I'm going to kill you. My man, my brother not my brother in any multiverse, actually. is it John Jones essential to this whole illusion plant? You're going to kill him now? You're not going to shove him back in? What, he's trying to shove him back in?
Right. Like, because the other thing. All right. So I had to do the timestamp here, because this was at I think at this point, we had less than 20 minutes left in the film. Mongol starts saying, the reason why I hired Lobo to capture you is because the Martian race has the key to War World. And I don't understand how, if you're operating this device, if you're currently in it, if it's running, why do you need a key? Like, it's on. It mm-hmm. The key is here already. But he says that apparently they hid it in the Martian race, and he wants to find out if John Jones, as the Green Martian, if he has any trace of it anywhere. And again, you have been traversing the multiverse. You have been collecting people from all walks of life. Why do you not have the key to this thing?
Did you hotwire it up to this point? A bunch of wires sticking out? So, at this point, Lobo has been messing around with Martian Manhunter, but suddenly buys Martian Manhunter enough time for the other heroes to show up and help. And they're like, oh, that was nice of Lobo. And John's like, no, it wasn't, because I incepted Lobo's brain to convince him to help us. All right, bro, that's fine by me. Whatever gets us to the end faster. And the next part, I don't even know how to break this down. Essentially, if you remember Dragon Ball Z, where Piccolo and Kami were different people and then they merged together, that happens here at this last section of the movie. Now, you may wonder, was this set up? No. Anyway, he does it, and now he's the key, and he says, like, boom, boom, I'm going to blow up the whole world.
Yeah, because apparently the key information was hidden in the DNA of Martians, and it was split between Green Martians and White Martians, and it was only through them working together that they would be able to turn the key for Warworld. Unfortunately, they talk about it in a sense of peace, but John just basically takes mind control of one White Martian that's in the group and forces him to fuse with him so that they can become the key. Starts blowing everything up. And as our Trinity here trying to figure out how they're going to get out, which should be the end of the film, of them getting to New Earth, realizing the new reality, they get picked up by a hair on fire steel person who was credited as Harbinger, who was voiced by Karen Walgren in this film. And she just says, your services are needed, teleports them off, puts them on a new ship, as they watch Warworld completely destroy, most likely killing John Jones in the process.
Yep, and thank you for your noble sacrifice, sir, I guess. Mm-hmm. And as we go on to the next scene of them on the watchtower above Earth, Bluey Lady says, hey, guys, I know that was rough, but wait, just you wait until the crisis credits.
That ends Justice League Warworld. So now as we ponder, what in the world did we just watch? We're going to leave you with this podcast from the Forgotten Entertainment family that you should be listening to the next time you're not listening to us.
Hi, I'm Mike Phil.
I'm Mike Butler.
And you're listening to the Forgotten Cinema Generic Ad.
Join us every Wednesday as we talk about films that seem to be forgotten by audiences, whether it be because a more popular movie was released at the same time or the film simply didn't catch on with an audience in its initial run. We'll discuss what we love about the film, maybe don't love about it, but we'll always recommend you revisit it. You never know, you might find your own forgotten gem. Forgotten Cinema is available wherever you get your podcasts or at ForgottenCinemaPodcast.com or ForgottenEntertainment.com, as we are a proud part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
I swear I talk more in the episodes.
All right. So Justice League Warworld. How many stories in a movie are you giving this film today? Or should I put unconnected stories in a film today?
To represent the true representation would be none, because there are no stories, no coherent story I can find. I'm going to give this like a two. I know we've seen like some bad things over the course of the years of doing this, but I can't think of anything I've enjoyed less, except for Batman Unlimited, than this movie. This doesn't feel like any coherent connection of ideas. I'm not going to offer any RJ alterations. There's not anything.
Just remake the film.
I'm pretty sure that no one change would be enough to course correct this film. What I will say is an anecdote of Legends of Tomorrow had a very similar thing happen. At the end of season 2 of Legends of Tomorrow, spoilers, you should have watched it already. all the time traveling heroes lose to the villains, and the villains basically rewrite reality so that the heroes are either losers or personally serving their wins. One character starts to remember what happened, and they can go around and try to find all their friends to try in hopes that they can reverse all of this. Now, they do this in an efficient amount of time, and they don't spend too long in any section. You know, it's like one guy is, he was a history teacher, now he's a conspiracy theorist living in the basement. You know, that's it. They go and pick him up, and they get it going. Two of the strongest fighters on the team are working as personal henchmen for the bad guys. They have to fight them, but they get them out. Very simple vignettes. So, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. also did something similar with the Hydra plotline. But the point is, when you're doing a story like this, where heroes are brainwashed, they're sent to different dimensions, they don't remember anything. In order to keep the flow, there has to be one character that we are following that remembers and that is going. So, okay, I guess this is an Arte alteration, but this movie had the potential to be something if Martian Man, let's say the movie, forget about the heroes for a second, the Holy Trinity. Martian Manhunter finds himself waking up from being trapped in a war world. He frees a white Martian, and they don't get along because of the ancient history. But they're like, we have to work together if we're going to escape this ship, whatever this ship is. And along the way, before they can escape, Martian Manhunter notices Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman are in trouble, and he has to go and save them. And the white Martian doesn't want to, but let's say some henchmen start shooting at them. They don't have a choice. They have to hop into the illusion to get out. And now for the movie, we have the white and green Martian learning to work together in perfect harmony and while saving the heroes from different vignettes. And we don't spend 20 minutes each in these worlds. We spend maybe 5 to 10 max. We get what the world is, get out. And at the end of all this, they're immediately knocked out by Lobo. Then Mongo reveals, hey, I actually wanted the green and white Martian to be released. It wasn't an accident. I let you guys out because I wanted you to work together to, you know, freeing the heroes wasn't part of my plan, but it's good. Now that you're in sync, you can now be the key to turning on world permanently. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Again, I am sandpapering over the myriad of issues here because just without it, without a central character at the beginning of this, this just feels like just random things smashed together. It felt like watching a DC showcase, except there was no credits in between. It just went all the way through. And no one told us when to stop. This does not feel like a movie. I really don't know what I wish I could provide more insight, but we normally rate episodes or movies here, but I don't think this qualifies as either. So, and I'm sure maybe there was some difficulty behind the scenes. Maybe things got changed around to meet mandates for where they were going to be, but whatever happened to this, I don't know, but I don't personally want to be a part of it again. What did you rate it?
Oh man, I kind of feel like you were generous. But hearing you talk about there most likely probably some issues behind the scenes about you know, placement and everything, because since it came out in 2023, it's most likely that between writing and filming of this, it's probably just got hit with COVID of like 2020 was when they started putting everything together. So the reason why I gave it a one is a lot for the same things that you were mentioning. It doesn't really feel at all like this was something that somebody sat down with and tried to connect any threading lines. Once we had the Wonder Woman story, it immediately repeated the entire first third of the film, but now with Batman. And it's like Batman trying to figure, he's like picking up on some differences, but somehow Diana completely forgets once again everything that just happened to her. So that's why for me it felt very much like I was just watching a very, very bad fan fiction of Warworld, of Westworld, I mean. And the thing is, I love stories like this where it's just like you see someone in some kind of like Groundhog's Day or a time loop kind of setting. I love those. So I was like a little upset that it kind of was like a bad version of that. Because, again, we're just seeing this, like, random mashup of stories being told that had to focus on each of these characters. And I feel like it would have made at least a bit more sense if you started off with, like, everyone was involved from the very beginning. They each was understanding something was different about the world they were placed in. Second film of it showed that they're having a more of an understanding, like they're really processing that things aren't clicking, for they seem to be different from the other people who are there. Third one, they decide to do something about it. Fourth one is when they get more of an explanation, but put in between 1 to 2 and 2 to 3, make sure you're giving us the wrap up. Give us something that connects to the wrap up. Show us Mongol toying around with Martian Manhunter. Martian Manhunter working to try to make things better for them. So make it seem like Martian Manhunter may have some kind of connection. Instead, we got the random old man who popped up in the middle of the water, who, assuming this is going to connect to a larger film, but as of right now, it had nothing to do with the story. And it also means that that person, if they're going to pop up later on, they could have helped out in some way, shape, or form in this film to help our heroes move things along. But they didn't. And it was just, spoiler, feels like a recreation of, though I'm sorry you had to watch it, just feels like a recreation of Justice League, the Zack Snyder's version, or at least the Joss Whedon version of the film that includes this particular scene.
Yeah, there's a great critic that I follow on YouTube, hashtag maybe sponsored. No, I'm not sponsored, right? but his name is Filmento, and he recently covered, you know, a Rebel Moon. And he said one of his issues with the movie is there's a lot of cool elements to it, but there were points where it just, you didn't know if the thing that the characters were doing would factor into the final plot. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know if they're moving any closer to the movie's end game, their final point, their objective. You know, you're just seeing things happen. And unless you're Pulp Fiction, which this movie tried to blatantly steal from, that doesn't work. And even Pulp Fiction, when you go back and watch Pulp Fiction, every single one of the segments works by itself. There is a beginning, a middle, end to the segment. And the fun is watching how they interweave with each other and gaining a deeper knowledge and understanding of each segment after you've seen them all. And the goal point doesn't feel so far away because each scene has a goal. You know, Vincent has to save Mia Wallace. Bruce has to get away from the gangsters chasing him. There are resolutions to that. So even though we can't see the full picture, we're satisfied because we know, did Bruce get away or not? Did they save Mia? We get those answers. Here, the answers aren't satisfying or pay off. Batlash's death, that doesn't factor in. Diana forgets Batlash ever existed. The whole stuff with Warlord, that doesn't matter. Batman never grapples with the fact that he was killing people, which is a big no-no for Batman. And the closest thing we had to relevance with Superman was him so-called hunting aliens, which we never get to see him really do, which, you know, would have been really interesting to see him hunt aliens as an alien. That would have been cool.
And you could have done basically just taken everything that you did in Man of Tomorrow, have him meet with, have the alien look actually more like John Jones. And this is, you know, like one thing, this is the reason why, this is one of the things, reasons why I gave this movie a one, was because even though it's, you know, something that we've already seen now about 2-3 times, with Superman storytelling in this universe, they do handle the concept of xenophobia with aliens. They show the real reactions of people. I feel like it does get handled well. So like the whole diner scene, as long as it took, I think it was just like a very real response for, especially during that time, which was in the 50s, even though it was in black and white, of how people would have responded to aliens. So that was done well. The other reason why I gave it the one, Wonder Woman's story, not all of it, but I think that like, once you get into like the earliest stages of it, more so the setup, it's great. It does pan out. It does give Wonder Woman a sense of just like, she's going to come in to clean up the town up until we kind of get introduced to Batlash. And then we just immediately jump into the resolution of the story for some reason. And Lobo, I think his lines are great. I thought he was funny. There was a great moment in which when he does reveal that he's actually here trying to steal Warworld from Mongol, that he's, and Mongol's asking, he's like, hey, I told you to kill the prisoners. He was like, wait, kill them? I thought you said free them. And you see how easily it is to mix those up. And it's like, all right, Lobo's funny. Lobo is a character that at this point I would like to see more of in this universe. Maybe just have him have a solo adventure, make the R-rated film for Lobo in this style, in this version of the character as well.
Yeah. And, you know, the last example I'll use is if you're going to prey on like their personal fears, amp that up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like if the whole point of Batlash dying was so Diana's personal hell is a guy close to her dies, amp that up. Have a guy die for her like every 5 seconds. Like,
yeah.
Bruce, he doesn't like killing people. So his vignette doesn't make any sense. But if you change it so he keeps being forced into situations where he accidentally kills people, you know, it would have made more sense for him to be a priest than an assassin.
That actually holds the gun. The only time they tried to play with that was when he held the gun and didn't want to shoot it. And it was like, I would just assume this. And he pulled the trigger anyway, I think. And I think the gun was just empty.
Yeah. And that's also where you draw the line. He killed people, man. And again, even in Superman, they had good foundation for it. But again, pump that up. Have Superman walk into a facility where they have little green men being dissected in a room. It's a rated R movie. We don't have to see guts, but you know, you can have that kind of mature theme. Amp it up, because as it is, everything is like the base level of what it could be. And that also further makes each vignette feel lesser than, because these feel like the first idea. This is the first draft of each of these. But I want more of each of these worlds. If you're going to make them important enough that we have to take 15 to 20 minutes each to really get into these worlds, go harder. Go much, 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 much harder than you have. Why did they end up in the same illusion? That's also... Anyway. Yeah. Keep them separate. Like, what?
Right. And that was... And I know there was the desire to bring together to the team, which is another negative point for me, because the title doesn't work at all.
Like, oh, Justice League. It's four people.
It's right. So it's like, just call it... Like, comic book-wise, it's the Trinity. Or just call it that, like, because it has never been used in like in an animated production title before, but like I think it's more common now, especially given the fact that 2023 has been releasing, but like at this point we've released several stories of the Trinity. They even had their own comic book series with that title. I think people would get it. Like, you don't have to worry about people being confused about what's going on. Justice League, yeah, it has the bigger branding, but call it what it is. Like, because besides John being tortured once again, who appears for like all of 5 seconds, there's no other Justice League members that pop up. And the other thing, you talk about War World. I feel like the War World thing was just thrown in really randomly to get people to want to be interested in Mongol here. Because like, you get no sense of what War World is, except for the fact it's like a prison to dial in on people's misery. And that's it. You get that explanation at the conclusion of the film, when it gets destroyed like 5 minutes later.
It's giving real Brainiac in Super, in the Legion of Society. This movie scrambled my brain. Can't even remember the other. But yeah, just the villain who comes in is like, I want to do this. I really want to do it. Why? Because I really want to. Okay. Good luck.
So this doesn't scramble our brains anymore. I'm just going to jump right into the comic book section. We're going to keep this one quick because, well, the comics are nothing like this movie at all.
Thank God.
So a little bit of backstory. As we saw in the film, we got a sense of a Western, a fantasy, and a sci-fi film from the 50s. This was done on purpose because it was under the suggestion of the executive producer, Butch Lukic, who was tired apparently of working on superhero animation. So he worked with Jeff Wamster to put together a film that kind of would allude, knowing that they had to create a superhero film, but would still step into these like other worlds. And the thing that modeled it was a lot of like other films, like we mentioned, that dial into this like vignettes of just like, here are separate characters and multiple storylines coming together to converge on the climax that would, you know, in a normal setting, will combine everything together. We didn't get quite that here. But we did get a lot of sense of just like some of the same stuff you'll see in like spaghetti westerns and Conan the Barbarian is what we saw here. But the comic that this is based off of, according to some mild research, is the 2021 to 2022 stories of Action Comics from issues number 1030 to 1046, as well as a follow-up called Superman World Apocalypse. This is the entire World saga. It is taking place after Dark Knight Death Metals, where the Justice League had to go basically all the way to like the source and the breach to battle just battle it out over there because something was about to change reality as they knew it. And this was more or less kind of treated as a long-term crisis event that was happening, but not quite the crisis name. And it ended up being now that a lot of the characters ended up changing who they were, how they operated following these events. And it's, again, as I mentioned, 1030 to 1046. That's about like 16 odd comics there. And it was all led by Philip Kennedy Johnson, who worked alongside Becky Cloonan, Conrad Michael W., Sean Lewis, and Sean Aldridge, as well as a bunch of illustrators, to create these stories in the Superman storytelling of Action Comics that first started with World Rising, then The Arena, then War World Revolution.
Okay. So I'm guessing Martian Manhunter was the key in all these stories.
Yeah, Martian Manhunter doesn't even appear. No. Might have to go through these again, but I'm 90% sure that Martian Manhunter had no impact on this story whatsoever. The main focus of the story is after the battle that Superman had at the bridge with the rest of the Justice League, he's noticing that his power set is a little different. More so that he feels weaker. However, his speed and his other abilities are a little bit more enhanced. Because of this, he gets this tested out by Batman and Ray Palmer, the Atom, and they see from Ray's side, they both see that apparently Superman is experiencing some kind of cellular decay, and Batman worries about this, causing Superman to worry about this because he sees it as like if in the event that his powers start to fluctuate, he knows that after that big battle they had, there's going to be more threats, especially like people like Mongol who are going to come up and try to mess with Earth once again. So, as he's trying to figure out what to do, he talks with Batman. They decide that Superman needs to talk to his son, John Kent, because they believe that John Kent is ready to have Justice League status, which would ultimately make him the new Superman of Earth.
Okay.
And this is because it's a way for Superman to create a legacy to, in the event that he either has to retire or go away for a large period of time. And that immediately starts to happen because a ship from War World crashes onto Earth. It's revealed that inside this ship is someone that can speak an ancient form of Kryptonian. And now Superman has to work alongside and try to save this person while also dealing with the diplomatic affairs of the fact that the ship landed in Atlantis. And Arthur, who is no longer the king of Atlantis at this point, unfortunately can't help Superman and refuses to help Justice League to try to get this ship over to the Justice League so they and the American government. And this causes basically a battle between the Justice League, Atlantis, and the United States.
Okay, yeah. Okay, none of that happened. Okay.
And that was basically the intro for Rising. There was a person on this ship. And again, as I mentioned, this person spoke old Kryptonian as Kara Zor-El or Supergirl was able to tell John and Superman about. And then we find out that this person is actually has been living on War World this entire time, has been a prisoner on War World, which is a gladiator planet.
Oh, okay. That's much easier.
Yeah. And because she gets twisted by Mongol she gets told that like if she does this thing, he will help her do this thing and could keep her life going, as well as her family, as well as a bunch of other Kryptonians who are apparently trapped on this planet. Her mission is to go and take down Superman, kill him, or find a way to bring him to War World so that he can be killed by Mongol. Mm-hmm. This happens for War World Rising. A battle comes out, and then Superman decides, speeding up the process of John becoming the Superman of Earth, he decides to leave to head to War World, and that starts a 10-issue series split between The Arena and War World Revolution, where Superman goes, fights Mongol, loses, has to fight on the gladiator planet to get back all his to get back his cred, and all while at the same time, like the other Kryptonians are messing around on Earth while John is trying to save the day and be the new Superman. Lois Lane is growing an appreciation for Krypton because she's reading books about it, and it's a long story, but honestly, this was what War World was in comics. We've talked about it in the past. War World was basically a gladiator planet. It's always been a sense where it's like people could come in and it's just like get taken and they have to fight either with Mongol or whatever creature Mongol had captured. So I can see what they were trying to do here of creating these scenarios where our heroes had to fight. It just doesn't make sense because you're taking their memories and you're putting them in scenarios that are very already similar to the worlds they come from. It's just multiverse jumping. This movie is just basically trying to prep us for the idea that we're going to start talking about multiverses, even though we already got that explanation from Justice Society World War II.
So they could have just did a movie where they get beamed up and then they're just forced to fight, like Thor Ragnarok style.
Yep.
And then at one point, like, they go to Wonder Woman and it's like, hey, well, I guess Wonder Woman goes to them because I don't think they have Wonder Woman in this universe. But like Wonder Woman goes over to them and be like, hey, that's Clark, but it's not my Clark. I guess he's taking warriors from the multiverse. Why'd he do that? So it could have just been that simple.
It really could have been just that simple. And we could have gotten to actually see the Justice League fight Mongol versus Mongol just basically fighting against Lobo and Martian Manhunter, while the rest of them just take on and fight Martians, trying to learn their abilities again and just destroy War World from the inside, which Martian Manhunter would just basically do himself.
I'm demoting this movie to a one.
Yeah. Thank you for seeing that. I'm still trying to rank it compared to Madam Web, to be honest, though.
Madam Web is a sequence of events. You know, it starts with her mom getting killed in the rainforest while hunting for spiders, and it ends with her. I'm not going to spoil it in case you haven't seen it, but my goodness gracious.
Yeah, but I think it's the same thing that unfortunately Madam Web just had to undergo, where it's just rewrites, reshoots, ADR maybe. Things just unfortunately didn't quite work out from beginning to end because of so many changes that had to probably happen behind the scenes. This is also a little sign of just like sometimes just trust that your people will do the process. This is just one of those cases where you see a comic book that falls so heavily on the concept and storytelling of War World creates a dynamic for where Superman has to not only battle against, like, have a physical battle against this like creature of Mongol, but also have to worry about what's happening at home because Mongol had this bigger threat that was sent to his home that he can't even tend to right now because everything that's going on. Like, all of these storytellings would have been better if you just kept it like that. We didn't really need for it to be every single superhero gets their scene. It could just be, as you mentioned, just one person, we follow along that person, and that's it. This would have been the perfect time to just have it be that Wonder Woman was the one that was leading the entire thing, because the last time we saw her was in Justice Society. So since between those films, we've had two Batman films. There was another with Kryptonians. We saw Green Lantern and Beware My Power. So it was just like you had an opportunity to just take another superhero and have them be the lead. But unfortunately, we fell into the constant cycle of just like Batman has to be in the film as a starring role. And it doesn't make sense when it's none of these stories actually connected. We see how it works when it's just like one person taking the lead and it flows.
Wow. Yeah, that really is a thing. Like Legion of Superheroes. Yeah. Anytime you shove Batman into the story, in the Tomorrowverse at least, it has not really paid off for them in any kind of meaningful way.
Yeah, so no offense, Jensen Ankles. Ankles.
No Ankles. Jensen Kankles.
Jensen Kankles.
No, we would never make fun of your name. We know what you do with Soldier Boy. It's,
yeah.
We're scared. We're scared.
Yeah, we're scared. You're the one, Jensen. But we're just going to, because of that, we're going to wrap up there on a high note. Positive vibes about Jensen Ackles.
Red Hood. Yeah. Under the Red Hood. Remember that good movie?
Yeah,
really watch good, that timeless, this movie. 10 out of 10 movie. It's the opposite end of the spectrum. I had one story. Just the one. Batman remembered his name in that one. he didn't kill anybody.
All right, so that's going to wrap up our episode there. Be sure to support us on Patreon and check us out on our socials for updates on upcoming content and episodes that you can find across Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and many other platforms. Take care of yourselves and remember that if you have a group project, something similar to this, make sure that you actually connect all your narratives. You don't want to get a C as a final grade when it's probably like 90% of your grade.
And if you find yourself on a planet where there are dinosaurs and you figure out the security system, don't touch the wires with your bare hands. Put on a glove, something. Just don't bare hands. Don't do that. You're going to die. The dinosaurs should have already killed you, but you're going to die now.
Thanks again for listening. Yet another DC Animated Podcast is a proud part of the Forgotten Entertainment family. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and share us with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and on social media at YADC Animated Pod.